Great to have you with us on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here. We are broadcasting live from the 7-acre dairy company in Paoli. Beautiful location for this, and we have, I think we got a great audience. Big crowd here today as we talk with our guest about her book. It's titled The Art of the Break. The author is Mary Wimmer. She's a Wisconsin-based writer, school psychologist, and educator. She's also the author of Reaching Shore. It was the first place winner of the Midwest Independent Publishers Association Young Adult Fiction. Received that award. And she's written a couple of nonfiction books as well. But today we talk with her about The Art of the Break. It's a great title for this book. And as we talk with her, I hope you'll join in. If you're in the audience, you can just raise your hand and Jill Nadeau will come around with a microphone. You can ask your question. But if you're listening at the radio or online, give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. Or you could send us an email to ideas@wpr.org. ideas@wpr.org. Mary Wimmer, welcome.
Thanks, Larry. Thanks for having me.
Oh, man, you've got a wonderful book here. I really liked it. I love the title. But before we get to the book, how'd you become interested in writing?
Well, I was always interested in writing, even when I was younger, but then I became interested in history, and so I kind of started thinking I would go into that, and then I became interested in psychology, and so I circled back to writing. When I was working in the schools as a school psychologist, I started taking classes during the summer at the Right by the Lake, UW-Madison, which we all love and which we all miss. And so I started with Kathleen Ernst, who's been on the show, and she taught me a lot about writing for young adults. And so I had this story in my mind about Reaching Shore and the true story of the sinking of the Lady Elgin. So so I kind of did that, and then I thought, well, maybe I should write in my field. So I wrote a couple nonfiction books about school refusal and truancy. And then I thought I'll try to, you know, tackle an adult novel. And so I started thinking about cheese.
Started. I mean, that would have been the first thing that crossed my mind, too. For those who haven't read it, give us the basic story, because there are people listening who haven't read the book yet.
Sure, happy to. So the story is about Charlie and the main character, who is a woman who, you know, grew up in a small town, Falls River, a town I made up. And she grew up next to her father at the vet, learning how to make cheese. And so she was really interested in the science aspect of cheese. And so she became, she went to UW-Madison, majored in biochemistry there. And she, you know, was one of a few women in the program. So this was, now we're talking the late 60s.
Yeah.
And then she, after that, she becomes a cheesemonger, one of my favorite words. So she works at a place in Milwaukee, patterned after a cheese market downtown Milwaukee. And then she marries Rick, who is a Vietnam vet, and things aren't going so well there. He is suffering from PTSD and alcoholism, and she loves him, has really tried, but it's not working anymore. So, and then her father has a heart attack, so she moves back up to Falls River, kind of intending to do what she always wanted to do, is work
make
with
cheese.
Him. Yeah.
Work with him and make cheese.
Yeah.
The Art of the Break, which is, I love this title because it's got a couple of meanings as it relates to the book, but as it turns, in terms of cheese, what does the Art of the Break mean in cheese making?
Well, it's a part of the cheese making process. And of course, I did a lot of research going to several cheese factories. And at one point, my husband and I went to Monroe, Wisconsin, and we visited Roth Cheese. And I've told this story before, but I was fascinated with this young French cheesemaker, and he was working on an experimental vat, and I watched him. And so what the cheesemakers do is they heat the milk, they add the culture, the milk begins to coagulate,
yeah.
And so at they check with the back of their fingers, they stick their fingers into the mix and lift it up, and if the mixture is clear, that means they can go to the next process, a step in the process, and that is called a clean break.
So they get the clean break. If they don't, then they have to continue to heat.
It's all about the pH, Larry. They check it. You know, it's very scientific. They're checking pH levels, acidity levels, that type of thing.
So, why did you decide to set this book in the 70s? In the mid 70s is really where it is, isn't it?
Yeah. It might have to do with the inspiration for the book. I just kept thinking about this time I went to a cheese factory when I was in college with one of my college friends. Growing up in Milwaukee, we had, in the suburbs of Milwaukee, we had American cheese, we had Velveeta. In the holidays, we had the cheese balls. But I don't remember having that really good fresh cheese, even being in Wisconsin. And so my friend had taken me to this cheese factory near Gillett, and I saw these guys, all dressed all in white, standing behind the vat in their Wellington boots, which I thought were cool.
Yeah.
And they handed us some cheese curds, and they were so good. And I just was fascinated with that. And so that kind of started...
Put that in the back
70s.
Of your head a little bit?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's because that was in the 70s. I lived this. Some of us have very much lived the 70s, which was a time of great change.
It was a time of great change. I mean, there were so many things going on there that I had kind of forgotten about. I mean, the things that a young woman... Some of the trials and tribulations of, you take somebody like Charlie trying to get a bank loan.
Right.
You can't get a bank loan. You couldn't get a bank loan without a husband signing for
right,
it.
Right, right. Women had some challenges, didn't have a lot of power during that time. And she ran into the fact that in order to get a loan at that time, you really couldn't as a woman, or it was very difficult from my understanding, is that when a woman got married at that time, all the credit was put in her husband's name. And so she had to, for instance, my mom, she had... Whenever she used a credit card, it was always my father. She didn't have her own credit card. And I always thought that was kind of strange, you know. It wasn't a big deal. She could sign his name very easily. But so that was the law. But they changed all that with the Equal Credit Opportunity Act in the mid-70s, which prohibited discrimination on the basis of gender or marital status.
Yeah.
With regard to loans.
There was another instance in the book where Charlie tries to find a sitter, babysitter, and she was turned down by another woman because she was not with her husband.
Right, and that was based on a true story. Someone I know did that. It happened to her, being a single mom. And so the woman, for whatever reason, whether it be religious or didn't think that Charlie was going to be able to, you know, afford the rent, or whatever reason, she was discriminated against because she was a single mom.
Yeah. There are many instances in the book of letting go of things. And that was an important... Why was that an important theme for you?
Well, so she goes up to Falls River for her dad's, you know, he dies up there, and then they have the funeral. And as is the case, you know, oftentimes when we lose someone that we love, other memories of losses are reignited. And so she starts thinking about her mother's death, and she starts thinking about her sister's death. And so she was holding on to, as you say, letting go. She was holding on to a lot of guilt and, you know, self-blame for those deaths. So she goes on this quest. Part of the book is she goes on a quest to kind of understand what was going on with her mom. So she learned some things.
And kind of blaming herself for some things along the way, too.
Yeah, yeah.
Especially as it came to her sister.
Right? Yeah, her sister, and I think that's what we do sometimes. We, you know, when things happen that are, you know, traumatic, we, you know, look around for reasons, and sometimes we blame ourselves, and so she did. Her sister contracted polio during the summer of 1955. Her sister Rhea was about 5, and Charlie was about 9. And her sister, she took her sister to a playground, and her sister contracted polio. During that summer, the newspapers called it the Summer of Fear because there was a polio outbreak. The vaccine was out. Lots of people got the vaccine, but a lot of people didn't. And parents were terrified. They didn't know really how polio was, you know, passed from person to person. So they, like, people were paranoid about going into large crowds. They closed the playgrounds. They canceled the county fairs. That type of thing. But I read a really good essay in my research by Dr. Ralph Olson. And he was working at the UW Hospital in Madison during that summer. And he said it was a very hot summer. And 30 children died in 31 days during that summer. So I said, so Rhea, her sister, gets put in an iron lung in the local hospital there. And so Charlie has to kind of work through those feelings that are brought up as well about being responsible for Rhea's death.
So far we've talked about death, and we've talked about some downer PTSD, I think will be coming up in the conversation, and maybe alcoholism a bit, you know, and it might cause somebody to want to say, you know, I don't know if I want to read this or not, but for me it was an exciting read throughout. It was only in reflection, thinking back, that I was thinking on all of the various issues that you dealt with, but you deal with them in such a way that it makes it for really interesting reading. Mary Wimmer, our guest today, Wisconsin-based author, and the book that we're talking about is titled The Art of the Break. You can join in with your questions. Number to call 1-800-642-1234. Or you could email us to ideas@wpr.org. Or if you're in the audience watching right now, raise your hand and Jill Nadeau will come by and you'll put a microphone in front of you to ask those questions. And, gee, lots of people to thank today, but Jill Nadeau's our producer for sure. Our on-air producer, Clara Neipert, Tom Blaine, our engineer here in the building. Sarah Hopeful is back at Radio Hall doing the engineering work there. And I am Larry Mueller, and again, you're listening to the Ideas Network. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here talking today with Mary Wimmer, Wisconsin-based writer and author of our book club book that we selected a while back. It's titled The Art of the Break. It's a novel. Great to have her here today to talk about it. Again, if you have a question or a comment, I hope you'll join in. 800-642-1234, or you could email us to ideas@wpr.org. And let's take a call. Tyrone in Milwaukee, we'll go to you. Thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Good late morning, early afternoon to you, my friend. Long time since I've called in and talked with you, but thank you for taking my call and glad to be in your presence once again. Good afternoon, Milwaukee, or late morning, Milwaukee, and late morning, early afternoon to the audience and the young lady, Mary. Sounds like an interesting book there. I just wanted to, I tell you, I'm under magazines, and I'll do my best to get it there, but I'm reading so much stuff now that my brain's about to fall out. I'm reading so much stuff now. But I just wanted to say, well, yeah, you know, because I eat a lot of pizza. I love my macaroni and cheese. So I love what you said about the cheese. And I am a cheesehead. I love my Packers. I love my Bucks. I love my Brewers. But when you're doing that stuff, because I tell you, cheese, peanut butter, and potatoes, you better throw a handful of raisins in there, too. Otherwise, you're going to think Mount Rushmore is coming out of your back end. So that's one thing I learned. I will not do that all together at once anymore there.
Tyrone, you get yourself a copy of the book and take a look.
And some white cheddar.
Take a look. Yeah. Well, you know, you get, well, Tyrone hasn't read the book yet, but a lot of people have read the book. And you hear back from listeners often, I'm sure. What kinds of comments are you getting from them?
I think a lot of people are interested in the cheese making aspect and you know how I did my research, and so I always, you know, talk about how I started in 2017. I went to a cheese tasting with Jean Carpenter. She wrote this Cheese Underground blog, and she had a cheese tasting of women cheesemakers at a place in Oregon, Wisconsin. And so that's when I tasted some cheese from Marika Penterman's at Marika's Gouda, which is in their cheese factory is in Thorpe, Wisconsin. And so I decided to interview her. I wanted to interview all the women cheesemakers in Wisconsin. Apparently, there's about 60. There's 1,200 cheesemakers in Wisconsin. About 60 are women. I only, you know, interviewed a couple. I also interviewed Julie Hook, who was very helpful. But Marika talked to me about her experience with making her native Gouda from the Netherlands. And sitting in on the interview were college interns, all women. And that's one of the inspirations for having Charlie decide she was going to, you know, teach women how to make cheese and have that be a goal for her. And so just, did you know that you can go to Angelic Cheese in Northern Illinois? It's called Angelic Organics, actually. and you can learn how to make cheese. And so we did that. My husband and I, we learned how to make some soft cheeses, mozzarella and Gruyere, I think it was called, or Chèvre. Chèvre. Yeah, that's it. And so I really, really got into it deeply in terms of my research for on cheese making.
That's a lot of work. I mean, there's a lot involved in this, and we'll get to some more of your background and some of the research you did. But let's talk about Charlie for a bit. Charlie's the main character, although there are a ton of characters in this book, and I want to talk about that a little bit later on, too. And you did. You based her on.
I based her on no one, really. I just made her up. I guess she's sort of a combination of people who are interested in science. I was always more of the English and reading person, where she's more the science person, and she. Growing up, she was, her father always, let her do everything that like a boy would, he would take her hunting. And there's a scene where she goes hunting with Larry, her dad's friend, raccoon hunting. And I don't think she ever felt she had any restrictions that way. But then when she went to UW-Madison, she found that, a little bit, discriminated against in terms of how she was treated. But she goes
dismissed and, a bit, dismissed a bit by
a bit by the other, other male students. But she learned a lot from her professors, and but she was exposed to the. Dow Chemical protest at the time. So there's a scene there where she is a biochem major, and what the Dow Chemical was doing was they were coming in and they were interviewing or recruiting students to work at their company. And she decided she wasn't going to go. There was a big protest about it because they... manufactured napalm, which was used in the Vietnam War, and she knew, what that did, and so she didn't want to, go interview. She didn't want to go to the protests because she didn't want to get kicked out of college. But she ended up being a bystander at the protest, and so I think she kind of her eyes were kind of opened that way, and then. She does go to Milwaukee and sells cheese as a cheesemonger. But
those ties to her dad were. I mean, she had a really close relationship with her dad. He's a very prominent character in the book, but through memory.
Yeah.
Rather than as an active character in the book. How did you come to that? How did that help or maybe hurt the story for you?
It just, he was that presence of, she was really grounded because of her father, I think, and all she learned, he called her a natural at making a, calling a clean break. I think he gave her a lot of her confidence and, he was a real good guy, and she was surrounded by his friends. When she comes back, there was Larry. He was the cheese maker. He was a dairy guy. He took care of the cows at the dairy farm that they used the milk from. And then there was her dad's friend Walter. And these men, kind of stepped in and really became her support as she was growing up without a mother. In that way, I think you know, they really guided her, and that was her father.
And Rick was Charlie's husband, and she had also a daughter with Rick, Lucy?
Lucy, yes.
Yeah, Lucy. Yes. But Rick, Charlie's husband, had so many problems, and it left the Charlie struggling to either stay or leave him.
Yeah, just taking on, you know, his issues and trying to help him and get him to go to the VA and get help through the, you know, support groups, and he was resistive. And so I did some research on, you know, PTSD at that time, and I always think about the guys who went to, you know, were drafted and went to Vietnam and how difficult that was for them. And it kind of mirror, and then a lot of them didn't talk about it or get to work through it. And it kind of mirrors her father, who, you know, he was in World War II and didn't talk a lot about his experiences. But yeah, so Rick, I love the character of Rick. I think he's, you know,
interesting guy.
He's an interesting guy, and he's a good guy. It's just, you know, it's
got
hard
all these
for
problems.
Him. And then finally he gets, I did some research, and there were these rap groups, you know, that were really supportive, where they started, they would talk with other vets.
Yeah.
And that seemed to be more helpful.
Helping him out, yeah. We have a question from the audience.
I loved your book.
Thank
you. A question I have is, clearly you did a lot of research in this book, and I just wonder, what came first, the story, the research, and how did you negotiate and meld those two together?
Well, I would, you know, I would find out things through my research, like the polio outbreak in 1955, and then, you know, add that, and they were just complemented each other. You know, looking at, you know, the various aspects of cheese making that I researched, the women, you know, being less women in cheese making at the time, I was able to talk to, you know, different people about the technical aspects, and so I brought in the phage, which is the attack virus that, you know, attacks a batch of cheese, and it'll ruin a batch of cheese. And I, just, it really enhances the story. And so I had done some, I had asked Dean Summers from the UW-Madison Center for Dairy Research, you know, to get about some technical aspects, and he's the one who told me about phage, the attack virus that Charlie's dad has to deal with during 1956 that ruined his cheese, and then also Charlie was researching that. I just picked things up along the way and just filled out the story with my research. I think I would still be researching, because I find that so interesting. I would ask him simple questions like, would she be using a beaker? You know, I'm not a science person. And he would, yes, she would.
Yeah. Another question from the audience.
Hi. I'm curious if being a school psychologist had any influence on your writing or your research for it.
Yeah, I had John in the story, so he is the romantic interest. He's a childhood friend of Charlie's, and so he is a teacher. I made him a teacher because, you know, I love teachers. I think they're so important. Shout out to all the teachers. And I think they need all our support. But he He is of Menominee Indian heritage, and I was really interested in the creation of the Menominee Indian School District and that whole story, because that was a whole aspect going on in during that time. The tribe had the tribe's status was terminated in 54, and then it went into effect in 1961. And you know, there was deep traumatic poverty during that time. But so anyway, he and his grandmother, which some people did, moved off the reservation, and that's how he ended up in Falls River. But then he comes back. He is in Chicago, and then he comes back, and he starts working with a group who was starting the new Menominee Indian School District. And so, so I'm interested in that whole, when students, the students at the time, in my research, I found that the Menominee students were going to school in Shawano at the high school, and they were our accounts and documentation of that they were discriminated against, and they were expelled and suspended at higher rates, and they sometimes didn't want to go to school because of that. And so they were fighting to the students as well, and a group of Menominee members were fighting for the school district, and they eventually were successful in creating the district in like 1976. But that, my background as advocate for young people, and really came into play there. And then I tried to use my, my background with working with young people for Lucy's character and what, how she would talk and how she would respond and that type of thing.
And you have, I mean, it's a big group of people in this book, and they're all ages. I mean, you've got, you go right from birth, because there's a birth in the book, too.
There is a birth in the book at the Cheese Factory, almost like.
In case you haven't, yeah, that's another little tickler for you if you haven't read the book yet. But the number, I had to think that your own background and your own experience was really helpful in the characters, many of the characters that come alive in the book.
Yeah, and my experience, being living in many small towns in Wisconsin, a lot of the town of Falls River was based on my Stevens Point, where I went to college, and the co-op. If anyone's been to the co-op in Stevens Point, they kind of started it when I was there, and it's still going. And the skating rink. I spent a really cold winter. The winter of 1980 was really cold. And I would go to the Wisconsin River. There was an ice skating rink. And, of course, if you're in Wisconsin, you probably ice skate. So there is a few, scenes on the rink.
Another question from the audience.
Hi. I have not read your book yet. But I was struck by the naming of the friend of her dad, Larry. Is that because you knew Larry?
Oh, yeah. I just came up with that name. I don't know how. Larry and Walter. And you know what? They remind me of Jack Lemmon and Walter Matthau. I had them in mind. And I had Sam Shepard for Uncle Jack.
Oh, yeah. Perfect. Uncle Jack.
But we could say Larry Neeler. We could.
Well, we'll state that as a fact right now. I believe we have another question from the audience. So let's go there. Hi.
Hi, Mary. I haven't read your book yet either. I'm so impressed with this research and all the passion you have for all these different issues. Can't wait to read it. But what I was wondering, and maybe other people are interested too, is what's your process like after all of this research, all this knowledge, mm-hmm. all these things you know, and all your interests, and then how do you go about sitting down, I guess, and putting this all together, and did it take you a long time, and, you know, just that kind of thing.
Yeah, well, you've got about 7 years in this book, or five?
Yeah.
About 7 years?
Yeah. And I was working a lot during that time. Now I'm semi-retired from the schools, but I would really relied on the writing groups from that I was involved with, from Red Oak Writing in Milwaukee. I'd encourage anyone who's, you know, interested in writing to get involved in a writing group. That was really helpful because it gives you a little deadline too. And so you get feedback. And then I would go to different workshops. I went to a workshop in Provincetown in Massachusetts off Cape Cod. There's a week-long workshop. And I was not, a creative writing major or anything. So I needed, I just go to as many workshops and things that I can and get feedback, read a lot. But as far as writing, I know some people say they, write early morning, and I just can't bring myself to do that after all those years, waking up at 5:15, going to the schools that started at, so early. So I will, make sure I have dedicated, a couple hours a day for writing. And it's a slow process, so I will say that.
We have another question from the audience, so let's go there.
Actually, more of a comment than a question. But your description of your protagonist and the connection between chemistry and cheesemaking, and the challenges that your protagonist had to confront reminds me a lot of Lessons in Chemistry.
Oh,
by
yeah.
Bonnie
that's
Garmus.
That's a good story.
And she's gotten a whole lot more national exposure than you have.
But, I know.
But I just want to say I hope from what you're describing that you catch up with her.
Oh, so. Thank you. Yes, yeah. This will help.
There's nothing like being selected by Barnes & Noble as your book of the year.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
For
or a Larry Miller's book club.
We're so... I think we sell a few books for authors from time to time. So I'm really glad to have you here, Mary. Mary Wimmer, by the way, I should just re-identify what we're doing here. We are talking with Mary Wimmer, who is the author of The Art of the Break. It's our book club book selection. And you can join in with your questions. Phone in. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us to ideas@wpr.org. And our audience here is doing a great job, too, with lots of good questions. And a reminder that you're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Miller here. It's our Book of the Month Club selection that we're talking about today, and it's not really the Book of the Month. It's the book of every 3 months. I think every 3 months we select a book, and we selected a dandy this time. It's titled The Art of the Break, and the author is Mary Wimmer, and she's with us here in our studio today, though, is the 7 Acre Dairy Company in Paoli. We have a wonderful audience here. They've been asking good questions. If you have a question, you can email us to ideas@wpr.org. If you'd like to phone, you can do that, too. The number to call, 1-800 642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, and we'd love to hear from you. There's one person that I definitely want to talk about that we haven't discussed at all, and it, in a way, is kind of the burr in our side, Casper. Charlie has legal problems with Casper. And there's a lot going on with him. He has a lot of tough feelings. She owes him money based on something that her father had done some years earlier. So the tension is, how do we got to pay Casper off. But I was really interested in Casper. He was, you talk about Casper a bit.
Casper was a classmate of hers, and he was a bully, but he was kind of got that to be that way. In part, you know, his father was abusive towards him, and so in the story, Charlie and her friend John and Larry, when they're raccoon hunting, they witness some of this abuse, and but he. He was away. The family, the Raines family, owned the lumber yard. And I had to get a lumber yard in there because my grandfather ran a couple, well, they called them sawmills in Wisconsin. And so my brother was helpful in describing it. I, as a girl, I didn't get to go to the sawmill, but he did, and he, and the way he described it was how I wrote about it in the book, the old trailer and the, all the lumber laying around, and so it was his father, and then when they came back from the war, lumber wasn't, you know, the big moneymaker, right, and so... he went into dairying, and, you know, he's the one, Casper's father is the one who, you know, was the milk supplier for Charlie's father at the cheesemaking factory. And so, yeah, that was an obstacle that she had to overcome, was her feelings about Casper. And then she finds out, you know, comes to understand him a little better too, towards the end, and what he was dealing with, yeah, and his father being abusive towards him.
Yeah, and Charlie's father didn't intervene that time, and I think that was sort of the crux of Casper's dislike.
Yeah, exactly. That's he had his her father. You know, when he was in the hospital, he had this regret. And I won't give the story away, but it had to do with that family, and you know, too many secrets. I think with families, more so back then, the abuse and the alcoholism and that type of thing. So yeah, that runs through. Casper is you know, has his own challenges, but yeah, he was not he gave her a hard time.
Yes he did. I mean, have you come across that sort of circumstance that led to that? I mean, I wondered if you'd come across that in your work
in
as a psychologist and as working in a school and so forth.
Yeah, in school, we are mandated, you know, reporters, and now it's so different, you know. The school staff, if, you know, if we suspect abuse, we need to report it by law, and so it is not up to us to decide, you know, whether it's true or not. It's up to the county agency to investigate. But back then, I did a little research on this. They didn't have those structures in place as much as we do now.
Why is it important to have us in your story to have a Casper as a character?
Well, I was told at the Right by the Lake writing programs, those 1 week long programs I took, that you need to have trouble on every page. Christine just met. She's a Wisconsin writer, and
I know Christine.
Yeah, I took a class from her, and that's what she taught us. So I tried to put trouble on every page, and he was that. You know, the feedback you get. There's got to be more tension, more conflict, tension. So I tried.
Well, that brings up this is an aside question. I was a professor in science communication, life sciences communication at UW-Madison, and taught a lot of students and edited a lot of people's work as part of my editing students' work. But I also would, because I'm a reasonably good editor, I'd sometimes edit colleagues' work, who sometimes liked it and other times didn't like it. Was it hard to see your work edited for you?
You know what? The people who did some of the editing were just so insightful. And no, I think I'm getting used to it. You just get used to being critiqued all the time when you're doing these writing groups. And Tim Storm is a writing teacher who did some development editing. And of course, at UW Press, who was wonderful, Dennis and Ann Garvin, she's another Wisconsin writer who gave me some suggestions. I guess I'm just grateful for all the feedback I've gotten.
That's always the way I felt too. I've never regretted asking anyone to take a look at my copy and copy edit my copy, because you always learn something.
Oh yeah.
I gotta bring this up, although I don't want to discuss what it is, but. There's a detail near the end of the book where Charlie, and this caught me completely unaware. Charlie has another big loss, goes through another huge loss. And I thought, oh, now what's going to happen? Was it important for her character to have to deal with another one?
Another one. That's what I'm told. Conflict, and tension. So that was all part of it.
One more question from the audience.
Larry, how do you decide what book you're going to feature on your show, and how did you decide on this one?
Well, we go through a little process where Jill and I, typically, and Clara now, will sit down and look at books that we've been looking at. And in this case, Jill said, you know, I just picked up a book, and it's a new book, and I've been reading it, and I love the first couple of chapters in this book. What do you think? And she kind of shows it to me, and I said, well, yeah. And it's about it. One of our goals is we love Wisconsin authors. We try to highlight Wisconsin authors wherever we can, or we highlight books about Wisconsin or the Midwest, at least Minnesota, Wisconsin, Michigan, maybe. So we always have that in the back of our heads, is we want to highlight our people, and so when you find a good book. Like Jill found that book, this book, and then the rest of us take a look and say, yeah, let's do this. And that's that's the very scientific process that we go through. And I have yet to, in all of the books that we've had, I've yet to find a bad one. This is a particularly nice novel. We don't always use novels, but I love novels, and I certainly love this one. And Mary, I want to thank you so much for writing the book, and also for being with us today to talk about it. It was a wonderful conversation for me. Hope, I think it was for our audience, and thank you very much for doing it.
Thank you, Larry.
Mary Wimmer. Take a look at her book. It's called The Art of the Break, a novel. Mary Wimmer, the author, and I think it's doing pretty well. Yeah, she's nodding her head. Yes, it's doing pretty well. And we're going to continue talking a bit about cheese and also about artisan creameries with our next guest. That's up right after the news. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network.